How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 115 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. The Thunder just got rocked by the Grizzlies in Memphis, 114-80, 34 points, biggest loss by the season. I had a talk with Peter Edmiston, who hosts Locked On Grizzlies. We had like a great 30-minute chat after the game. I'm going to loop that in a sec. Russell Westbrook got ejected. Worst loss of the year for the Thunder. There's no two ways about it. Anyway, here's my talk with Peter. Hope you enjoy. Enjoy the weekend. I'll be back with you on Monday for, you know, all the Thunder talk. And until then, here's my convo with Peter.
Welcome into Locked On Grizzlies and Locked On the Thunder here as we do a special co-show here. Peter Edmiston with you, Locked On Grizzlies, joined by Fred Katz of Locked On Thunder and the Norman Transcript after tonight's comprehensive Grizzlies win down at FedEx Forum over the Thunder. In a game, Fred, that I guess this certainly didn't go as I would have expected. I don't know what you were thinking before the game, but this thing didn't happen at all the way I thought it would.
Yeah, I kind of thought, like, you know, the Thunder play really close games. The Grizzlies play really close games. These are two of the best and most frequent teams in crunch time so far this season. And the game never came close to reaching that, did it?
Not, you know, and it was, I think, from the very beginning, the strategy was pretty sound that David Fizdale put forth on Russell Westbrook. And I don't know how much, you know, you've had a chance to watch the Grizzlies this year. I know you're right there on the Thunder all the time, but the Grizzlies, you know, have these weird games where they'll just not give effort. They won't show up. That was what happened down in Orlando, on day after Christmas. But when they lock in defensively, they are really fearsome. And tonight, Russell Westbrook got the brunt of all of their force, and they really decided to cut off him as a distributor. They said, you know what, if he's going to pull up for jumpers, so be it. If he's going to drive in, try to draw fouls, so be it. But we cannot let anybody else get going, and I think that frustrated him.
Yeah, you know, actually, I thought the Grizzlies, and this isn't like a shocking revelation because the Grizzlies were the number one ranked defense in the entire league coming into the night. I thought the Grizzlies defended Russell Westbrook better than any team this year. They packed the paint so effectively against him. They got off passing lanes so well. They just forced a million turnovers. Look, Russ was having an off night anyway. He just looked generally off. He was having these sloppy turnovers, and he's prone to turnovers, but they were really packing the floor, the paint well against him. You know, Tony Allen, when he was on him, did an unsurprisingly really good job, I thought. And that's kind of Memphis for you, right? Like thwarting pick and rolls and basically saying, like, what I thought was interesting is that the Grizzlies, like, biggest foul as a defense, their biggest flaw as a defensive team is that they foul a lot. And they basically said, like, okay, we'll foul you if we have to. You're just not going to be able to pass the ball.
That was the frustrating part, I think, from Russell's perspective. They talked a lot about that. I talked to Tony Allen after the game extensively about that, and he kind of said that he gets going for big matchups. Yeah, that's Tony. I mean, he gets going if it's like a relatively, you know, average to below average player. He doesn't really get all that fired up anymore, but when it's like Russell Westbrook, like he's there. And he talked about it. He went through like a whole litany of like every play saying they did this, they did that, it is. They were very, very aware of what was going on. And I think you would speak to this, Fred, better than me, but I mean, it looked like very early on. I mean, Russell Westbrook had like, he had like what, 6 turnovers the first like 8 minutes or something. And it looked like pretty early in the game, he just wasn't in the mood to really fight this thing much longer.
Yeah. You know, Memphis, you know, I can't believe we haven't even talked about the ejection yet, but Memphis kind of set a precedent early where they were just gonna, everything can't be a foul, you know? And Memphis kind of set a precedent early to where it was just going to shovel around Westbrook as much as those defenders possibly could. And if some of them were going to be fouls, that was fine. But they were going to set that bar for what a foul was higher with more contact than it normally is. And once they did that, once they started knocking around Westbrook, and there were some calls that, like, I'll give Russ, maybe they were fouls. But for the most part, I thought it was just good defense that frustrated him, that frustrated the Thunder, and really turned him into what was probably his worst game of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a zero assist performance for the first time in 3 years is pretty rough. And you know, the thing is, Fred, like, that's what the Grizzlies do when they feel like it, when they're ready. I mean, it's so weird to watch them in games like the one earlier this week when they just didn't even really show up. Against Orlando, and a team that's not really all that good, was just going crazy on them, scored 68 points in the first half. They just didn't engage. Because when they feel like they're going to put their body on you and do the physical thing, and I heard our mutual friend David Locke talking a lot about this with the Jazz Grizzly game earlier, I guess a week and a half ago or so, that, you know, what you just said, you can't call every foul. And the Grizzlies really make a point, especially in FedEx Forum, to say, we're just going to be really physical, and we're just going to dare the officials to call everything. They're not going to. We're going to beat you up a little bit, going to slow the game down, going to make it so that you can't pull that transition stuff. And when that happens, and when you have a night like, you know, Westbrook had, it can cause the ejection. And I mean, that, and I think it was pretty early on in that second half, and he made it pretty clear that he was done. He was done talking. He was done with the whole thing. He was just done with the night. He was good to go.
So, something else that Memphis did really well was the Grizzlies played amazing transition defense. They were so good in transition. Every time Russell Westbrook got the ball, whether it was on an outlet or a rebound or whatever it was, like every single time when he was trying to run it back, there were three Grizzlies waiting for him on the other end. The Thunder just couldn't get out in transition. And like that's how they get their points, and that's how they were going to have to get their points in this game against one of the best defenses in the league. They were going to have to do it in transition, at least get mismatches so Westbrook didn't have an exhausting guy on him, or maybe so Marc Gasol wasn't, you know, just camping around the rim, camping in the lane and able to be the backline defender on pick and rolls and that kind of stuff. And they weren't able to do it. Like, the Grizzlies were just too good in transition. They fully prioritized just getting back and forcing the Thunder to work out of the half court. And I wonder if other teams, I don't know if other teams are going to be as capable of mimicking that, because the Grizzlies are a bunch of disciplined defenders and obviously really good defenders. And when you have Marc Gasol, this becomes a lot easier because, in my opinion, he's the best center in the league. But especially with the way he's playing this year. But I wonder if other teams are basically going to say, you know what? Screw the offensive boards. Just get back. And if you take away transition completely from this team at all other costs, like, the Thunder are a bottom eight offense in the half court. So if you just take away transition, then you can minimize the effects of this offense and minimize the effects of Westbrook. And the Grizzlies did that to such an extreme degree, and it really paid off. It really paid off.
Well, is the emotional thing with Russell, is that something that's exclusive here? Do you think that other teams, if they are able to, and I would agree that I don't think the formula that the Grizzlies put out there, I mean, they specifically targeted what you're talking about. Yeah, they went back, they made certain to, you know, slow the thing down, make sure that the fast break, the transition opportunities, that you can't get that head of steam going. They made certain to do that, but not everybody can do that. Not everybody has that kind of discipline and has the ability and defensive wherewithal to make that happen. But if you can, or if you can do some of it, will we see the kind of reaction emotionally that we saw from Westbrook and from Anthony Morrow, for that matter, a couple guys, you know, getting Enes Kanter had some moments out there too. Will that be the case with other matchups, or is that exclusive to just this night, Memphis, the particular physical nature of the game?
That might be the Grizzlies.
The Grizzlies just, you know better than I do, the Grizzlies just do that to teams, right?
That's like what they do.
They just do that. Like, they're, yeah, the Clippers do that to teams more than any other team in the league. For kind of different reasons and in kind of different ways. But, like, the Grizzlies always seem to be, like, beefing with someone. The difference between the Grizzlies and the Clippers is that with the Clippers, it seems like the beef carries over to the next game every time. And with the Grizzlies, it seems like there's just, like, a new beef for that singular game every time they play someone. And it happens with the Thunder a decent amount. Like, the Grizzlies have done a good job shutting down Westbrook in other games, too. And obviously, that was, you know, different coach and in a lot of ways a different roster, especially with Mike Conley not playing tonight. Yeah. But it's still a similar identity of this kind of, you know, viscously moving team.
Oh, yeah.
That's
well, what
that
they have to do.
Thrives,
I mean, they don't,
on defense and doesn't really score much. And
you're talking about, Fred, I mean, you're talking about you know, what the Thunder's offense looks like. I mean, the Grizzlies are the worst or second worst offense when you look at, you know, I mean, tons of different categories. Anything, you know, no matter what they try to do, they just are somewhat limited in what they, when you're starting, you know, Jermichael Green is an improved offensive player this year and was really good in a lot of effort ways tonight. Tony Allen has improved under David Fizdale, but he's still Tony Allen. Andrew Harrison is, you know, I talked about it on the pod the last couple of days. I mean, you know, statistically, if you look at, you know, synergy numbers, he's just a horrible offensive player. And tonight he was better than he has been. They have so many limited pieces that their offense is just going to be like that. So they have to, like, find a way to figure it out. They have to find a way to do something that's going to make that what they do work. And more often than not, what they do is slow the thing down, make it very physical, make it very difficult. It's not personal in the way that you talk about with the Clippers, and it's not, you know, bitching at the refs all the time the way that the Clippers will do, and generating just a tremendous amount of hate all the way around. That's not really their style. It's really just it's kind of like it's all business. Like, that's the only way they can win.
It's kind of amazing that Troy Daniels isn't being talked about as an MVP candidate right now.
Did you see his first month? I mean, the guy missed his first, I mean, I can't remember how many. He was horrible. And then he just lit fire. Like, it was crazy. And he's one of those guys that when he gets going, like he did in the fourth quarter, it's just stupid. Like, he just, you know, he could throw it up. You know, he has a little Steph Curry in him. He just can't do it for anywhere near as long or as well as Steph Curry. But he has that kind of thing where he just throws up a bunch of shots and they just fall. It's ridiculous, and it's really been helpful because the Grizzlies have been searching desperately for any kind of help off the bench, and he was able to do that. Zach Randolph, a little throwback tonight too from him. He was sensational off the bench. Those two guys combining for 43 points, which was more than enough on a night when the Thunder just didn't really have it. I want to talk about the ejection too, as you mentioned it earlier, Fred, and you and I actually, you know, unknowingly paired up on this thing because you wanted to know more about the ejection and the way the whole process works in the NBA. I ended up as the pool reporter that actually went in there and talked to Jason Phillips on your behalf to get the whole scoop on what went down. And you and I both have put the transcript out there of what he told me, which was essentially that, you know, Westbrook was complaining about the lack of a shot clock reset that he wanted that they didn't give him. And yeah, they told him, look, man, stop. We get it. Can't review it. It's done. Move on. And he was particularly complaining to Brian Forte about this. He got teed up. Then he started using some profanity, which they didn't like. I mean, and in the scheme of things, and you were down there, you could hear it better than I could, but it didn't, it was profanity, but it's not anything that's like, you know, beyond the pale. I mean, I think we've all heard worse profanity on an NBA court before, but, you know, given the situation and what happened, it was two quick techs.
I refer to it in my game story as farmhouse excrement. Does that work?
that's a nice way to put it. Yeah, I think that's right.
I always enjoy it when I get to summarize a curse word in an article. Instead of like, you know, just like asterisking it out, I always find it more fun to come up with a ridiculous term for it.
So it's, you know, farmhouse excrement. I think using, you know, something that was particularly smelly was kind of how it was. But I mean, in the scheme of things, you know, there have been worse. But on the
my mother has said worse things to me today. granted, she hates me, but that's beside the point.
No, that's you know what? Yeah, my mother never said that to me, but she was a saint. My father, on the other hand, now, that would have been a light day at the office for old Pops. You know, you can weave a tapestry of profanity, Fred, and we all could, and I think it'd be fun actually. And I've heard, I think referees. The frustrating thing about officials is not they. It's a difficult job. I think we all admit we've all talked about it. It's officiating an NBA game is really, really hard. There's a lot of contact. There's a lot of subjective stuff. You know, but I think the younger officials in the league, and some of the guys, the communication isn't there like it used to be. You know, the ability to go back and forth, even to have a little cursing out of frustration, especially on a night like this. I wish we had a little more leeway. And some refs still do, but I think that's kind of fading a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not saying you're wrong. That's an interesting point. It's something I hadn't really thought about. I wonder how much of it had to do with the actual words that he used, and how much of it had to do with his actual tone and the buildup. Like, Russ was talking a lot. Basically, ever since Andrew Harrison ran into him in, I think it was the first quarter, and basically leveled him, and there was no call. And it was a lightly official, like they let both teams get really physical. I'm not insinuating that either team got more of a benefit of a call, but on that play, like, Andrew Harrison hit Russ pretty hard, and it was in the backcourt, and the officials just clearly weren't looking. And there was no call foul. There was no call made, and Billy Donovan ended up getting a technical foul on it. And Russ was kind of jawing at officials ever since that moment. And it just seemed to me like him constantly just strewing a string of BSs at the official, at Brian Forte, who was the official who called back to back technical fouls on him. It just seemed to me that was like a straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about with tone is the thing, because you can the actual cursing, that's what they referenced. I mean, that's what Jason Phillips referenced specifically. But I mean, I do think it's tone. I think you can throw in a farmhouse excrement and with a little wink and a nod, and I think you're going to be okay. But if you could say something that's not even as bad as that, but if you say it in a very fierce and aggressive manner, then that's going to come across that way. I just think there used to be. I think Joey Crawford talked a lot about this, and he had his own issues with a lot of different players. But there was a little back and forth. There needs to be just a little more awareness of what is and isn't acceptable, and it changes on a day to day, game to game basis. And tonight, I think Russ was happy to. I think the game was beyond him. He was frustrated. It was one of those nights. But on a different night, if you get kicked out for something like that. That's a real problem. And I think there are plenty of referees who wouldn't have kicked him out for the specific thing that he did. That's why I just think there needs to be consistency with that call. And you have to, that's one of those things where you have to know the crew, but I think the officials that continue to be in the NBA, you need to allow for the fact that this is a very, it's a physical game, especially with the Grizzlies, but it's also an emotional game. And you have to give guys, I think, a little bit of leeway on this stuff. Or else you're going to end up, backing yourself into a corner.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's also worth noting that, like, so it's not always about what you say with referees. So, like, you mentioned Joey Crawford, for example. And maybe this is somewhat irrelevant, but it's an interesting story, so I'll tell it anyway. Joey Crawford, one of the reasons that, like, people say that, like, a lot of people don't like, I would say more NBA fans dislike Joey Crawford than like Joey Crawford. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons that officials, if you like talk to officials and ask them who's the best referee of all time, like, he's their Michael Jordan. Joey Crawford is the best referee of all time, according to pretty much every single official. And like, one of the reasons why is because he's like, so for example, Joey Crawford used to go up to, when he works with particularly young officials on his team, he would go up to coaches before games and say, like, if he's working with, let's say, Brian Taylor, who's now like a third year ref, but at the time was like a first year guy who used to work with Joey a lot. He would go up to him and say, "Hey, I got a rookie referee on my staff right now. You have problems with him. Say whatever you want to me. I will not tee you up. But if you say one thing to him, I'm going to tee you up quickly, even if it's mundane." And he would tell them that before a game. and guys would throw whatever the heck they were going to throw at Joey's way, and Joey wouldn't tee him up. And then they'd say something really menial to the first year guy. And I'm just using Taylor as an example. He's done this a million times. But he would say something, you know, and a coach would say something to the smaller guy, and Joey would tee him up, and people would be like, he said nothing. What are you doing? There, a lot of this stuff is based on context. It's based on previous conversations. It's based on relationships. And I think in this scenario, it's probably fair to say that there might've been a slightly quicker trigger from Forte than there are in other scenarios based on the language that we saw there. But that's just kind of a story to remind everyone that we do have to kind of take there's context beyond the actual situation that we're watching in a lot of these sorts of situations.
Oh, without a doubt. I think that's a good story, and it's a good point to make in this situation. It kind of leads me to the discussion, and I know we got to run. We don't have too much time left, but I do want to ask you after the game, you know, Russell was very pointed in his comments. He's probably going to end up costing himself a little bit of money for what he said, but he feels as though, you know, he's sick of being officiated differently. You know, he is, if I'm not mistaken, leading the league in free throw attempts in part because he's just so damn aggressive. Is he officiated differently?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Billy Donovan says that he is. Tonight was not the first time Billy has said that. He said a few times this year that he thinks he should go to the free throw line 20 times a game, and maybe he's right. But
he's kind of got to be behind his guy, though. I mean, he can't.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. But tonight was not like, it's not like he randomly came out and said it. Like, he said it before tonight. I understand it. Honestly, maybe he should. Like, he's like nothing we've really seen before in terms of just like his athleticism and size as a point guard. Like, LeBron has that same issue, you know? Like, you could say that LeBron gets fouled every time. The ultimate guy to say like that is Shaq. You know, yeah. Shaq used to get destroyed, but because he was, you know, made of bricks and he didn't move whenever he got hit, what looked like a foul on Muggsy Bogues didn't look anything close to a foul on Shaq. You know, what looked like a foul on, like, other centers didn't look anything close to a foul on Shaq. So Shaq used to have that problem all the time. Like, Shaq probably should have gone to the line 20 times a game. So I understand where that comes from, but at the same time, like, I just and I don't have a problem with either of those two guys saying it. Like, I understand the sentiment, but at the same time, like, there's always a baseline. Like, every player has a free throw baseline. It's just part of the human. It's not really human error. It's just the human factor of having, you know, real live human being officials. And there's a baseline for every official. They don't feel like they can send a guy to the line every single time he goes inside. Because if they do, then, like, what is this game that we're playing, you know?
Right.
Everyone kind of has a slightly different baseline. And I think you have to take that into account. It's just kind of how the game is played. Now, Billy and Russ are in positions where they don't want to accept that, and they probably shouldn't. But I think we, as kind of unbiased observers, have to acknowledge that when we have this conversation.
No, it's very difficult to officiate the game exactly as it should be. It's very difficult to send a guy to the line every single time. There is always going to be a sliding scale. There's always going to be examples of a guy like, you know, Westbrook in this case, or as you point out, Shaq, or go back to, you know, any of the really forces of nature. And I would put Russell in that category. I mean, he's a force of nature. He is so incredibly energetic and so aggressive and manic at times that it's difficult to conceive. Sometimes when you watch him in actual person, you're like, geez, and you can't quite figure out what you just saw. I think officials are going to always have difficulty with guys like that. It's easier in some ways for a guy like Harden. Harden gets so many free throws because he's a little slower than Russ. He's a little more languid, I guess is the word I would use. Like, it's a little easier to tell exactly what's going on. With Russ, it's so crazy and it happens so quickly and it's such a clash that, like, I think sometimes it gets a little blown away. Officials just can't quite deal with it. That's difficult. That's always going to be the case. He's always going to be frustrated. I don't think he's officiated especially differently, at least not like exclusively to him. I think this is a phenomenon that's going to happen forever. You're never, as long as you have humans in charge of this stuff, you're never going to get away from that, because you're never going to be able to consistently give every foul the way that it needs to be given. And, you know, he gets the foul line plenty. I think he could always, he probably deserves more, but he's getting the foul line, you know, quite a lot. There's also an entertainment factor too, Fred. You know, I mean, like if Shaq went to the line 20 times, I mean, people would turn off basketball. You know, no one wants to watch, as we've seen, the parade of DeAndre and Shaq and whoever else, you know, to the line over and over and over again. You have to factor that in too. And the officials, I think subconsciously, they shouldn't be factoring that in when they're making those judgments, but I think they can't help but do it subconsciously.
I think that's probably right. Like you have to take the human factor in, whether you accept it as legitimate or not. You have to accept it as fact and reality.
Yeah, it's not fair to do otherwise. Last thing, Fred, where do the Thunder from here? Like so far this year, I think it's you see now in with what Russ can do. It's remarkable. Guy's still averaging a triple double. We're almost halfway through the season. It's insane. Where do the Thunder finish?
I think they're probably somewhere in that 6-7 range with Memphis. I don't think they're significantly worse than Memphis just because of tonight. They played particularly poorly tonight. There's no question about that. The Grizzlies came into this one with a negative net rating, though. You know, the Thunder are a team that's kind of outperformed their net rating, too. I kind of expect, you know, both those teams are playing better than 600 basketball right now. I kind of expect both those teams to come back to earth, but I also just think there's whoever finishes seventh, whether it's the Grizzlies or the Thunder or Utah or somebody else, there's such a huge difference between seven and whoever the heck is eight in the Western right. Conference. Like, the Thunder are on a really tough road stretch right now. But I just don't see them dropping to eight, whether eight is Sacramento or Denver or Portland or whatever it is. Like eight through 15 in the West is just so bad that I just don't see either of those teams dropping below seven.
No, I think the seven are done. I mean, I think you can. There's going to be a little movement from the seedings and all that, but yeah, I mean, I think the top seven are done. There is a massive gulf in quality and everything else. Once you get from seven to eight, and whoever ends up in eight is going to be cannon fodder. But I'm with you. I think the Grizzlies are kind of in that same boat. They always outperform their net rating. They just have this clutch.
It's true. It's a weird Grizzlies thing that they're always better than their net rating.
Because it's a clutch thing. And I think, you know, they tend to be a slow paced team. They tend to run stuff more than most. So I think they're more comfortable in those kinds of games. I think they just kind of have a much more of a familiarity with doing it. Sometimes it's to their detriment because they don't blow out. Tonight was a rare thing because they don't blow out teams, you know, all that often. They're much more comfortable in those kind of close sort of games. They're like the stalking horse. They like to just kind of be near the other teams and then pull away right at the end. But you know, 1 year would be a fluke maybe if it's this year. But it's every year. I mean, this is like four straight years now, five that they've outperformed their Pythagorean. They just do it. So yeah, I think they're going to continue to do that. I pegged them for 41 before the season. I think they're going to be a little better than that. But it'll be in that same boat. I don't think either the Thunder or the Grizzlies will have home court advantage for whatever their playoff series is.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Also, before we go, like, you're so lucky you get to watch Marc Gasol play all the time.
He's something else, man. And in fact, I'm working on a piece. It's interesting because I talked to him after the game, and his performance without Mike Conley this year is fascinating. He's significantly better. And I'll give you, you know, this is for both of us, so it's not an exclusive, but it's exclusive to our two podcasts at least. I just got done before we got on the Skype doing the numbers. On his net rating in games this year without Mike Conley is plus 11.5. And his net rating in games with Mike Conley is minus 0.5. And the Grizzlies are 8-3 in games in which they tried. You know, they've punted a couple games this year. But in games in which they've actually tried without Mike Conley, they're 8-3 with Mark and without Mike. And in games with both Mark and Mike, they're only 11-10. And Mark's, you know, personal ratings, his plus minus, he's plus 75 overall without Mike Conley and minus one with him. So, you know, this is an interesting kind of dilemma to figure out. Mark is fantastic and he's having a great year. But the combination of Mike and Mark with what David Fizdale wants to do is not exactly working. And it's trying to figure out why is a tricky one.
That is interesting. Is why do you think that? I mean, it sounds to me as an outsider, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds to me as an outsider, there's a lot of noise in those numbers, and that's something that could just regress to some sort of norm throughout the season. What's your theory?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'm kind of digging into it now, actually. I asked David Fizdale about it after the game, and his quote was, "I think Mark is too unselfish when Mike comes back. I think he wants to share the game with Mike, but he needs to understand and trust that Mike will get his. A lot of the system is built around Mike having the freedom to go when he wants to go. But for us to be a high-level team," this is Fizdale talking, "Mark has to stay aggressive offensively no matter who's on the floor with him." And it's true that if you watch, Mark tends to defer a little more. They don't run the offense through Mark when Mike is playing, and that is a little bit problematic because, as you saw tonight, I mean, he can orchestrate as well as anybody. He always has been able to do that. And he just tends to lose a little bit of that aggressiveness in his shot making, particularly in the mid range and going outside and past the 3-point line, as he's starting to do more of this year. He doesn't do that as much, seemingly. Now, there is definitely a lot of noise in the numbers. I mean, it's early and you're talking about not even half a season. So, nothing is definitive, but there's a big enough gap. That's a big, the 12 points in the net rating is a big gap. What is 30, 35 games. That's enough for there to be something there. I don't know that it's statistically significant over the course of an entire season, and if it would stick around if Mike was truly healthy, because, he's still coming back from that back fracture in addition to the toe problem. So those are fair questions. I'm not saying this is definitive, but it's happened enough this year to where it's something. It's not nothing. It's something. I just don't know exactly what that something is.
That's interesting stuff.
Fred, I appreciate it, buddy, and I hope you feel better. I know you weren't feeling especially good, so I appreciate you gutting it out.
I told you, this is my flu game podcast. This is my flu game podcast. It was my flu game gamer. Hopefully, I did my better than Michael Jordan did. That's my only goal.
Well, that's a hell of a goal. I'll tell you that.
You're not gonna beat the best if you don't strive to beat the best, right?
Good God. It's a shame too because you didn't get to experience the culinary delights of our fair city. But soon enough.
I have a hot take.
Oh God, no, this may be a bridge too far, Fred. You better be careful.
The Michael Jordan flu game is a little overrated.
Oh, it's what are you doing now? What kind of medicine have you? Okay, this is too much. Your medicine has clearly kicked in. You're on something.
He was pulled.
Look at the man. He was poured off the court by Scottie Pippen, crying. Yep. America wept. The ratings were off the charts. Come on, Fred. A young Peter Edmiston was emotionally moved by this. You're killing me here.
I think. Look, there's a lot of Jordan things that I think are overrated. We could do a whole podcast on this.
God,
and
I think
he's the best player of all time, but there are a lot of things that Jordan has been turned from human to legend. And if Michael Jordan played like 20 years later, Twitter would have turned so many positive Jordan things into negatives. Twitter would have ruined Jordan for us, just like Twitter ruined LeBron James and
Fred,
ruined
Twitter
Kobe
ruins
and ruined everything.
Everything. Twitter ruins everything. Twitter would have ruined. Go back to Moses. Twitter would have ruined anything. You don't. Whatever it was, social
Twitter
media.
Twitter ruined Moses.
Yeah, they would have griped about the Red Sea and how it wasn't parted fast enough, and yeah. there would have been something. It always would have been something, Fred. So that's just. That's how it goes. Hey, I hope you rest well and travel safe. And we'll do this again. I had a lot of fun.